I think the most common mistake in all organizations, government, non-government, is to make your website a reflection of your organization. And that is not how your customers see you. For example, if you've had the pleasure of calling a large company and they tell you you're talking to the wrong department, the wrong division or something or other, and you go, well, aren't you, you know, company XYZ? And they go, well, yes, but we're division so-and-so. And that's often reflected in the website. And as a result, the customers are just confused and usually go somewhere else.
And so how do you go about doing it? You almost have to walk in your users' feet for a little bit, their shoes, to figure out, okay, what are they looking for? What? How can we help them find what they need?
There's lots of tools to do that. You can do shadowing, it's called, which is literally stand over the shoulder of your users and your customers. You can record their interactions with the website. You can do focus groups. You can do interviews, surveys. There's tons and tons of tools, and those are the kinds of things that we get involved with to make sure that what the technology is trying to do is actually the right thing. Because you can put a lot of technology up, but you know, we've all been around technology that's not useful.
And how much of this is that stuff, thinking about these things, and how much of it is the technology?
Percentage-wise in a project of what is called a redesign,
right.
it's typically going to be 30-40% of the total time and budget is going to be spent on just doing research and design and testing of those designs.
And my sense would be, having done a couple of media sites before, people tend to rush through that part. They want to get by that part and just get to the doing it. Let's just do it.
Regrettably, they rush through both. But
right.
And the fun part is that yes, they rush through the first part, and then because that was usually not fast enough, they then compress the technical part further. Websites are always, they always need to be done yesterday. And that's just par for the course. It's usually because everybody realizes that what they're doing is not meeting their customers' needs. So I would say a lot of it depends on how the organization's set up. In large organizations, it depends on who's running the website. If the technology group is running the website, well, then sometimes there's not enough time spent on understanding the customer's needs. Business or a commercial entity, it's going to be marketing is oftentimes running the website, and they're going to spend usually more time on understanding the customer's needs and maybe not enough time on the technology. So the interesting challenge is, how do you get the two to come together, have those conversations, understand that this a website's not just a communications tool, but it is also a technical, has a lot of technology behind it, and that they both have to balance those needs. And that's something we often help with.
One of the big changes over the last couple of years is what you talked about earlier. This all of a sudden people are actually looking to at least dip their toes into the water of some kind of interaction.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is that? It scares the living daylights out of most agencies, doesn't it? Probably most organizations.
I think it depends a lot on how comfortable those people are as users. I think if you're if you are a regular user of the web and you're one of the statistics, if I use the web 4 hours a day or 6 hours a day, well, then you're going to feel more comfortable with what is good, what is bad, and have some idea of ascertaining quality. But if you're someone who the web is, you're still having your secretary print out your emails,
right,
then yeah, you're going to be scared out of your mind, because that's like, you know, putting a rocket on the moon.
Yeah.
That's not something you personally have ever been involved with.
And when you go to organizations and say, okay, we need to think about some kind of interaction, their response is generally what?
It depends highly.
Everything from no way, never, not going to happen to people pushing you to do more. I mean, are there people out there saying, okay, that's great, we need to do even more?
Yeah, I mean, Most of our customers are repeat customers. So it's usually, in fact, the more sophisticated companies online don't ever stop improving their web presence. I mean, you can't stop.
Yeah.
Because as soon as your customers are happy with one thing, that means you need to move on to the next way to engage or speak with them that they want. And the fact is, to be a leader, you can't stop.
One of the things that often happens with sites is they become these Frankenstein monsters.
Yes.
And so you design this wonderful site that looks so fantastic, and then you get all these people saying, well, my stuff needs to be on the homepage. And so you put that there. And then all of a sudden, the homepage particularly is just this monster of stuff.
Right.
How do you deal with that?
Well, websites are software. So that's the hard part. Websites are both, they're tools for humans, but they're also maintained by software. So if you think of a website kind of like, you know, Microsoft Office,
yeah.
You have your minor fixes and your minor changes, and eventually it starts getting really long in the tooth, and you have menus that are 30 items long, and you're starting to say, well, you know, I really don't even understand what the point of most of these things on the menus are. That's when the next major version comes through. That's when you do a, quote, redesign in website terminology. But I think that's what you often see, is that people realize that, okay, we've sort of overextended this fundamental design, or the world has shifted. And an example of the world shifting is the new iPad interface. Some of the basic navigation paradigms that made a whole lot of sense on the desktop all of a sudden don't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
So you, at some point, you have to kind of throw it out the window and say, okay, we need to consider mobile users. We need to consider touch-based interface users. You know, there, a long time ago, people thought TVs were going to be the new web browsers. So there's all kinds of variables that from the outside world that cause people to head into that cycle.
I have my my iPad and my iPhone here. How much have these changed the work that you do? Particularly the iPhone seems to, all of a sudden, mobile is just...
mobile has had phenomenal impact. Some companies that we have worked with, we've actually recommended, and there's one I'm thinking of right now, where we're actually recommending they do mobile first. Google actually has come out and said that they now think of as the mobile application as being the primary application, and secondary is going to be web browser. And I think that is the right strategy, especially when you look at your audience. I think it's, well, I don't...
Yeah. Is it a different mindset when you go into mobile? I mean, do you think of it differently? I mean, the screen's clearly not as big, so.
There are a lot of factors. Just like you need to think of an audience, you need to think of the constraints of both input and output. So you need to understand what your audience is trying to achieve whenever you're building a website. And what I mean by that is you need to understand if you're, say, a government entity, you know, what are your demographics, what are their preferences, what ways do they typically communicate with your website? I actually spoke with an agency that said that they saw almost 40% of their traffic coming from mobile devices, and they had no mobile presence. So
that should be
a massive concern. I actually find it sort of interesting. Right now, if I were running an agency, I might say, let's worry only about mobile, because mobile is actually more ubiquitous than desktop devices are. Or sorry, desktop browsing is.
Yeah.
So if you want to make something truly accessible to the population, you might say, well, let's worry about mobile, because everybody's got a mobile phone. Not everybody has a computer and a dial-up ISP, or sorry, a cable modem or whatever Fios.
And it seems like there's real hope that we always talked about this digital divide. Now, all of a sudden, these devices are so ubiquitous that this works really well when I say these on radio,
yes,
doesn't
sure,
it?
Sure, sure, yeah.
These kinds of smartphones
and
any all these mobile devices so ubiquitous that all of a sudden it's saying, hold on, maybe we don't need to worry about that digital divide in the same way if we can build a platform to reach out to these people.
So an interesting thing about the digital divide is there's been research about iPhone penetration into lower income demographic, and essentially what they found is that those people they thought originally they're buying those iPhones just because they were cool and flashy and all those things, but
no,
an iPhone actually makes a whole lot of sense. It's correct.
Sorry, it's a little pun.
geek humor.
Yeah,
anyway,
welcome to my world.
Right. So the the iPhone, one of the beautiful things is, or really any smartphone. I don't need me to be an Apple advertisement. Any smartphone,
Android,
if you look
whatever.
At the cost of the device with the cost of the monthly fee for the data, it's lower than what it's going to cost you to get a cable modem and a desktop device. And you've already got to have a phone. So you've got a sunk cost plus an additional 20%. If I didn't have a bunch of money to waste, I would probably say, okay, well, that's a cheaper way to do it.
Yep.
And so smartphones are the replacement for desktop browsing. But going back to your original question, there are a lot of things you need to consider on mobile devices. And that's, like you said, it's going to be the form factor, the real estate, rather the screen size. The mobility changes things drastically. We've done mobile websites where, you know, you find the nearest hotel type thing.
Yeah.
And that is incredibly convenient. And it's helped our customers in the commercial side, you know, show very good returns on their investment.
Unfortunately, we're just about out of time, but
give me something
folks should do and something folks shouldn't do. Is there one in both those categories as they launch off in this endeavor?
Sure. I would say, and this probably the the thing you should do, and it's not always possible, is you should look at your analytics, and you should spend a lot of time understanding your analytics.
And you probably have more data than you actually...
You probably do. A lot of people do, and they don't realize how to get to it. They may think their server logs are impossible to get to. They may not have access to, and I know there's government constraints around Google Analytics, but there are analytic pieces of data that you can put together, or with very simple effort, do some research on what people are using right now and why they're using it and how they're coming to you. I'd say the biggest don't do is do not let your website turn into a reflection, or do not let it just become your org chart on a piece, on a screen.
And particularly for agencies, I think the challenge is don't let the bureaucracy take over the website. People are already frustrated with the bureaucracy. Don't let that appear on your website.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same in commercial entities. People don't want to know your org chart. They don't care. They just want you to solve their problems. If they're reaching out to your particular agency, they might not even know what the acronym that your agency is, what it stands for. They've just been directed there by someone or by Google. And they're just looking to a particular problem that they're trying to solve. And, too often, even if you call up about your credit card, you start finding out all these things that you didn't want to know. You just want an answer. And that's sort of the whole point of gearing your website to your audience. Understand your audience and meet their goals. Don't meet your own organizational hierarchical goals.
Great information. I want to give you take a minute and talk about your company. Why should somebody choose you guys over somebody else?
Well, I would say we're unique in the fact that we combine both highly effective design with technology. That was actually how we were founded in 2002. It was, at the time, that was very unconventional. There are some competitors in that space, but most of them are much, much larger than us, and they were a result of acquisitions. We're doing extremely well due to the fact that customers can come to us and ask for, how do we do some usability research? How do we do some testing? And then how do we impact or integrate that into our content management? And, oh, geez, we have this Section 508 compliance, mm-hmm. and there's all these technical things we need to worry about. We're unique in the fact that we can address all of those things. We're big enough and have a lot of depth in those areas.
I lied, and I got to ask you one more question, because okay. one of the sites that it seems to me is really going to have ripple effects across government is recovery.gov.
Yes.
Where there's mapping tools, just so much there.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear people talking a lot about it.
Yep.
Why is this site? Is this site as good as I apparently think it is? And why is it so transformational?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say because we live here. And right. in Washington, it is transformational because all of a sudden we are very interested in what's going on and where the money's going and what is changing. I'm not sure that I would necessarily say it is as transformational. I'm from the Chicago area. If you live there, I don't know that anybody out there is going to say, hey, I was on recovery.gov today and, look at what they're spending on this. I would say the big transformation is it was deployed quickly.
Yeah.
It was pretty well done, especially given the time frame it was done in. And it, it's not painful to look at, which is a change from many government organizations. I mean, there is something that needs to be said for the aesthetic of a website.
Yeah.
If it's just literally appalling, then you're, no matter how compliant it may be, you're just not going to want to use it.
And I always, there's that good enough for government, which
sure.
I hate, but people, if they see this website that looks governmental, mm-hmm. they just, it feeds that kind of notion, I think.
I agree. I think, I think that a lot of government activities, citizen to government activities could be conducted on the web. And actually, one of the things I was going to mention is there's a great website I came across, because I'm a bit of an outdoors person, was recreation.gov. I was really surprised to find that I can literally reserve a campsite on any national park in the country on that. And I went, wow, that's more than just information. I can actually
do something.
Transact.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine if you could, if your IRS forms weren't on printouts, if you could do them on the website. I know there's, Quicken and all the other things, but just imagine when you could start interacting with the agents on the website and do things like reduce your call center volume, all the things that all of our commercial entities want to do. I think a lot of the same things could be achieved in government, but I'm meandering. So.
No, we love the meandering. Anything I didn't ask you about that I should have? That's a nice open question, and me doing my job is fine. You can say that.
I don't know. I think you touched on a lot of the key areas. I think one of the areas that is very engaging and interesting that Vivek Kundra is doing is the data.gov, exposing the data. And mm-hmm. I think that's a great step forward. I think it would be nice to see government websites start aiming at higher customer satisfaction as a goal, and that customer satisfaction be measured not just by the ACSI type characteristics, but getting a little more sophisticated and having a higher concern of citizen.
But the data.gov seems like something that is, talk about inside the Beltway, that's something that you and I might think is really cool, but your parents in Chicago, they don't care about.
Unless you're sitting, and I'm sure it's a very small percentage of population that's going to sit
around. And I'm not
around.
Saying anything negative about
I'm just saying, I don't sit around and crunch numbers and CSVs all night. Right. It's not my idea of entertainment. So, it's certainly relevant and it's great for transparency. But is it actually useful for me to know what, how many petty thefts occurred in whatever region?
Right.
For some people, it's useful. And they will crunch it. But I think the next step is making interfaces that actually do make it useful and engaging for people so that they're not trying to become, analysts, which we don't all need to be analysts yet.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you.
It. I'm going to stop there.